Now look here, I'm Alan.
I'm Catherine.
And we've got something to tell you. Practicing your radio voice?
I have.
Great. Hopefully we can have... Yeah, we had so many technical funnies the last time. Lots of bumping our microphones and breathing into the thing.
Oh, we're rubbish.
Oh, yeah, you know, and all the editing to try and get rid of it. Anyway, you said you wanted to talk about James Bond.
Yes, I actually think this is going to end up comprising several sort of episodes. This might end up being a series, but since Spectre just debuted.
Has it come out yet, or was it just the previews and the trailers and things?
No. I know it's come out because...
I'm so out of touch. I have no idea what's going on.
No. The only reason I know this is because I saw something on my feed that had photographs of Kate. You know, Kate.
Okay.
At the premiere in London. And if James Bond... premiered in London, I believe the movie is out.
Oh, okay. Because I think we know a fair bit about James Bond. We're not experts. We're not James Bond nerds, but
I'm a total James Bond nerd. What are you? Why did I even marry you?
I'm one of the cool kids. I'm not a nerd.
I beg your pardon.
Anyway,
James Bond. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't want to cut you off there. Sorry. I want to say, most of my James Bond knowledge comes from that. It was a couple of years ago, I think. We went through a bit of a James Bond marathon phase. We were getting the movies one by one, watching them in order. And the funny thing is, I know we got as far as Remington Steele.
Yes.
But I can only remember up to about halfway through the Roger Moore years.
That could have been your age, though. A person retains a lot of information from when you're younger because you're absorbent.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you've got a lot less filling your head. As soon as hormones kick in, then there are far more interesting things.
But, I mean, we watched the series, right? I mean...
really, from the beginning. Doctor Who.
Yeah. What? No.
Doctor No.
Yes. we sat and we over the course of several weeks, we watched them one an evening for a while. And it sounds like you're saying that at some point I was no longer, whenever it was, let's say 35 years old and 6 months and 3 weeks, and then 35 years old and 6 months and 3 weeks and 1 day, and that was the tipping point. And my memory just died.
No.
I lost the ability.
No.
Which I can go with. I can believe it. So
in childhood, you remember a lot of things, whereas when you hit the teenage years and you get all hormonal and you start finding suddenly girls aren't gross anymore and all that stuff, then for some reason that part of your brain stops retaining all sorts of extraneous information, you know, like all of the names of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all of that stuff. I have a similar thing. My father is a rabid James Bond fan, and we were subjected to James Bond, a lot of it, for a very long time. I feel I'm quite versed in the sort of lore, the James Bond lore. And at the same time, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing how you become
the thing that you hate.
Well, you become your parents. I'm a massive fan now. I don't let a single James Bond movie pass without watching it almost immediately. So, yeah. But anyway, I mean, we're not going to talk about our sort of childhood with James Bond. There wasn't one.
Yeah. But it's interesting, I mean, how the character changes with the different actors, which You know, it makes sense in Doctor Who, because every time they bring in a new actor, they explain that he looks different by having that whole, he's died and regenerated.
Exactly.
And he doesn't just get a new face, his personality changes and everything.
Whole demeanor.
What's James Bond's excuse?
There isn't one. There just isn't one, and they don't make excuses about it either. It's just what it is.
Because they sort of have a continuity going, and then they'll just reset it. They start over. And suddenly... Well, I mean, the biggest reset was when Daniel Craig came in, and they suddenly started from the beginning again with Casino Royale.
But that was the cleverest thing they could ever have done. By the way, who was your favourite James Bond?
I'd have to say Daniel Craig.
Really? That was going to be mine. Can they be the same one? Because I also...
We are allowed to like the same thing.
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, why?
Oh, yes, we're not siblings. The reason I chose Daniel Craig specifically was because, in the first place, the original Ian Fleming books described James Bond as a blonde.
And a bit of a psychopath.
Well, yeah.
A pretty brutal, thuggish type.
He is. No, we're going to get to that. But just the physical features. He'd been a military man. He'd been a sailor. Well, at least he'd been in the Navy.
Well, he was a naval man, yeah.
And I actually... I don't know if you know this. I dated
a guy
in the Navy. In my younger years.
Major, I'm
not sure what his rank was, but you know, who cares? He was hot. The whole point of the thing is, people who've actually done work on ships, even in modern navies, are fairly well built. And this was one thing that seems, and I don't know if this was just the style of the time when old Scotty Scottsington became James Bond.
Surely some mistake.
Yes. He was this meaty trunk of a man, you know, but not. This was not a man who had done military service, because, like, my father's a military man. I come from a long line of sort of military civil servants, and I've got to tell you, the build, the physical build of men who've done active service is just different from men who've basically been actors all their lives. And although Daniel Craig is obviously the modern, beefier, sort of horseshoe version of that, I have to admit, he was always what I imagined when I read the Ian Fleming books. This, you know, his forearms were kind of thick. Thicker forearms. There are certain things, certain... identifying characteristics to a man who is a man of action, as opposed to a guy who's just being the role. And as much as I loved old Connery, and like, he really did add, I mean, he set the tone really for all of the James Bonds after him.
Well, he was the first one that everyone remembers.
Well, of course, no, but nobody counts.
Because there were the two before him.
Oh, but, like, nobody even knows those names. Nobody counts. Nobody's even seen it.
I mean, the first one was some guy who did radio, the original radio plays. I say original. I mean, the first appearance out of the books was a radio play, and it was some actor, and I saw it in an episode of QI. I can't remember his name.
Okay, but no, you can't count the radio ones, I don't think.
And I think there was a second actor as well. It was a TV appearance.
Once again, no. But no, I mean, we're talking about the first MGM proper decent.
Well, yeah, the first appearance that really got a wide audience and that anybody remembers, Sean Connery.
Exactly, Doctor No. So,
when he climbed out of the sea in that bikini. Because I know that for our parents, that was a formative memory.
No, that was Ursula Andress. Andress.
Right.
And they actually kind of paid homage to her in one of the recent James Bonds, when old Daniel Craig
walks
out of the ocean in his I wanted to say in his jocks,
which was a bit of a blooper because Ursula Andress was not in Casino Royale. She was in Doctor No.
That's very perceptive of you. He was a total hottie. Why shouldn't girls have eye candy, you know? And this actually leads me to the next point, which is basically that James Bond is incredibly misogynistic, and it's steeped in kind of male energy and male fantasy.
Especially my second favorite. I'm almost embarrassed to say now, old Roger Moore.
Yeah, no, but Roger Moore was, and the thing
he's a slimy
Roger Moore brought to the
guy.
Role.
And the actor himself is a bit of a slime
guy. Oh, of course. Even now he's all saggy and old. He's become a bit of a, what's the Playboy Mansion guy?
Hefner.
Yes, he's become a bit of a Hefner in his old age.
Well, he's like an English Hefner.
Yeah.
You know, he's got these sagging jowls, but he sits in his dressing gown and his slippers.
No, I can totally see that. I can see why. Because the thing is, he added where I think Sean Connery was kind of classy, he had the brutish elements of James Bond, which was never in the Ian Fleming books. Roger Moore smoothed it over.
He was an action hero. And you look at how the action heroes of that era, they were always these big meaty men with very little finesse, and they get into fist fights, and it's just these big slow motion spin your whole body around with your fist flailing out at the end.
Yeah.
You can just see the thud, wallop, biff. You know.
No, but what made it revolutionary was the fact that he had a bit of finesse. You know, he'd walk into a casino. And he knew how to play. I'm talking about the Sean Connery version.
Okay.
And he was smooth. He had his etiquette down. Mm. You know, there were elements about him that were smoother than the. You know, he was a spy after all, and
Now I never had that impression when I first watched the Connery films, because I grew up in the era when Timothy Dalton. Started, and he was just this slender
James
dude in a tux.
Bond. Next to George Lazenby, and you know the sad thing is that as an actor,
uh-huh.
Dalton is brilliant. He was just a crap James Bond.
Yeah.
He was there's that scene I think in his second. I can't remember the exact film.
Living Daylights.
No. It's the one where his buddy gets eaten by sharks. The CIA agent. He dies regularly.
Yeah,
actually.
That guy's.
what's his name again? I'll tell you now. But he gets eaten by sharks, or at least he gets bitten by a shark, and you know, James Bond saves him, and he's there, and he sheds a tear for his friend, and it is honest and it is heartfelt, and you're watching this and you're thinking, no, this is not James Bond. James Bond is supposed to repress that, and turn his heart into a diamond. That is James Bond. James Bond
does
not.
He sit there with a sneer because this guy was weak enough to die.
That's harsh. No, what he's supposed to do
that's
is
Bond.
Like, no, get angry at the baddies and take it out on them and be even more brutal and nasty to the baddies. Because, you know, at heart he's a goodie. He knows what side he's on. He knows he's on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, you know, not necessarily the sociopath you're painting, but the shedding of the tear when his buddy died, which is totally fair, but at the same time, it was acted too well. It was too emotional. It was too real. You don't want real from James Bond. Do you want real from James Bond? I don't want real from James Bond.
I suspect a real James Bond would be sitting at a desk a lot, going over field reports.
A real James Bond would have been married by now with a couple of kids.
Uh-huh.
And his kids in the back of the minivan would be like, Daddy, why are we taking a different route to school? And he'd be saying, you never know who's following. And he'd have his Smith & Wesson tucked down his undies or something.
From what little I've read, I think an actual real-life James Bond would not have a gun.
No. Maybe a taser.
He would spend most of his days at home in England, commuting to work at GCHQ, that's the signals intelligence people. But
on the underground. And
yeah, and every now and then, and if he gets shipped out, it'll be for a couple of years, and then he will have his little room at the embassy in Marrakesh, or wherever he's been sent. And because I've read a few, articles by people who've been in that business or in areas related to that business. So
yeah.
Diplomats and so on. You'll see them writing columns in newspapers or becoming novelists like John le Carré. And although they're doing all the same things, it's in a much more... It's government service, you know. It's bureaucratic and it's dull and it's...
I had a friend who I went to school with, and her father worked for a security company or something. But in his early years, he'd been in... he'd worked for the Secret Service, and he'd been a diplomat or an attaché or whatever gets attached to these sort of Secret Service-y sorts of jobs. And they'd lived in various countries in Africa and Europe. And he was this pleasant somebody's dad type who had this kind of, you know, bureaucratic job. And he did do slightly weird things, like he would drive a completely different route to school and to work every day. He had all these old habits, which might have come from like the Cold War or something. But he, you know, and he was terribly smooth. And, you know, I'd only wished that I'd been old enough to appreciate all of the smoothities, because every now and then he'd say something that I didn't get, and I'd sort of laugh and drink my lemonade.
Was it a sort of suspiciously out of place one-liner?
Probably. Like, I can't remember the actual words, but
like a he'll need to keep his head if he wants to get ahead in business.
Yes, exactly.
Because he's actually gone and secretly pushed a button and decapitated the assassin on the motorbike behind him.
I can't remember. No, I do remember.
How old were you?
I would have been 16 or 17. And, okay. I mean, that was the age of his daughter. I don't think he was trying to pull ass. You know, he had a wife. But, no, he was quite smooth and smart, and he'd make all of these terribly intellectual puns that none of us got, because none of us were old enough.
But that's what I'm thinking. But maybe he was still active. That's the word. That's the term that they use. Active. And that means that as he's driving you to school, Russian assassins are trying to kill him, and he's subtly doing things.
Causing them to
die horribly. And that's what those witty comments were.
Oh, right.
Those were his little one-liners.
Oh, that's possible. No. It wasn't. That is a cool thought. But sadly, real life is far more mundane. I think he spent more time, you know, commuting to work in traffic and making peanut butter sandwiches for his kids.
But can you imagine James Bond in this role?
But that's what I'm thinking. How would because you've mentioned the sociopath
you see how neatly I segued there, because before we started you said I want to talk about James Bond's domestic life.
Well, yes, you have, and thank you for that, because that was actually, I thought that would be quite compelling. Yeah. I mean, I think he'd be competent as a breadwinner, you know, if he can hang on to his wife and not like...
Well, I'm sure brutal assassin money is pretty good, because I know you're probably not going to live to collect it.
But I mean, here's the thought. Okay, he is incredibly competent as a spy. And he's got all of these incredible skills that make him very attractive and watchable on the screen as a spy. But how competent does that make him in everyday life?
I remember it was something quite recently, and to be fair, I can't give a reference, because this is something I heard somebody quote from something that they'd read on Twitter, and it was Daniel Craig being interviewed about whatever his most recent Bond film was at the time.
Yeah, it would have been Spectre, I'm sure. It depends on how long ago you watched it, obviously.
And the interviewer had asked him, so what have you learned from this role? What can you apply to your daily life, just as a normal person, from these movies, from the way you've played it? And he sat there, and apparently he sort of just sat and thought this through, and really, for a few seconds, just creased his brow, and he opened his mouth and said, nothing. Nothing
at
all.
Yeah, that is just perfect. Yeah. No, but this is my question. I mean, we live in real life, as everybody does, and we have to pay for the roof over our heads and buy groceries every month and pay school fees and all that stuff. So here is my question. This guy who is able to tell an M16 rifle from an M75 semi-automatic, whatever.
Well, I can do that as well, because I was once a schoolboy.
Well, of course. Mm. Okay, let's kick it up a notch. A man who can converse in both Russian and Greek. A man who can walk into any casino in the world, although let's be fair, they're all of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of know the lingo, and we're talking about an uber competent man. We're talking about somebody who is just absolutely at the top of his game in his field.
Mm-hmm.
Take him out of that field and put him in our world.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where your neighbor is bitching that your tree has grown over his fence, and he's being terribly passive aggressive about it. And your 3-year-old.
One afternoon, you just hear the little noise, and he drops dead. Problem solved.
Well, yes. And no, but he won't do that, because then, you know, people will ask questions and stuff. So obviously, you can't go that route.
Yeah.
There's also the whole question about, you know, he has a relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
Presumably they're quite close, and she kind of knows his history. But she loves him, and she trusts him and everything. He can't say all of these charming little snazzy lines with any girl who walks into his office anymore.
Yeah.
And as time passes, his daughters get older, or his daughter, and start bringing her school friends around, who are now pushing 17, 18.
Yeah.
Becoming more attractive. And basically, he's living this idyllic life with the picket fence and the 2.5 kids and the Labrador.
Yeah.
And it, let's say he's got his old Aston Martin for old time's sake, and the dog wheezes on one of the tires.
His wife probably gives him a hard time about it, because it's this impractical thing that's costing money
that
to maintain.
Exactly, that he can't get the kids into. And he sort of has to wander out in the mornings in his plaid pajama pants.
I was imagining him
newspaper.
Sitting at about 45 and just being really sad and depressed.
But here's the question.
And sitting there, like, the little bug zapper in the kitchen, and a moth flies into it, and then he turns around and with a bit of a slightly resigned air goes, shocking.
Yes. Or he goes to the bank, and the girl behind the counter is quite charming.
Mm-hmm.
And she sort of says, "Ah, oh, good afternoon, Mr. Bond." And he goes, "Good afternoon, Moneypenny." And she goes,
"What?
The what's that now?" You know, or...
"Good morning, sir." And he goes, "Yes, it is now."
I mean, it's... Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sort of... I don't want to demystify James Bond, actually.
Because I think he could stand being taken down a peg or two.
He's... I mean, he's just this lovely... You suspend disbelief for the sake of the franchise, for the sake of the shows.
Mm.
I adore James Bond. I don't care that things are impossible. I don't care that they don't actually work. I don't care that they're unscientific. I really love the sort of energy of the movies, and he's uber competent. I'm also a big fan of the we recently watched that movie,
Quantum of Solace.
No, not James Bond.
Oh.
The American James Bond.
Oh, Mission Impossible.
Yes.
The latest. Ethan Hunt. Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same thing. This guy always just makes it work, manages it. And in fact, I think the Mission Impossible series should really become like the James Bond series.
They should, because old Ethan Hunt is actually a much less interesting character than Bond. I mean, and Bond is pretty one-dimensional. Okay, with the exception of the new Daniel Craig, they've added a second dimension. He's a two-dimensional character.
I disagree. I think Ethan Hunt is actually more interesting than James Bond. James Bond only seems more interesting because there's more history. You've gotten a chance to get to know him over the years better.
Okay.
Whereas there's only 3 movies behind Ethan Hunt.
There's 4.
Well, whatever.
The one we watched recently was the fourth or the fifth one.
Was that number 4?
Mission Impossible, Even Impossibler, or something.
Oh, yes. It would be...
It was Mission Impossible 1, Mission Impossible 2, MI2, which is the one that started with old Tom Cruise dangling by his fingertips from a mountainside.
Oh, yes.
And then the helicopter comes and bugs him and pisses him off.
I don't mind seeing Tom Cruise in climbing gear.
Oh, he had a shirt off. And
well, yeah.
I'll never forget that incredibly sculpted body he had in, what was it, Tropical Thunder?
He's still no Daniel Craig, I'm sorry.
Well, Tropical Thunder, where he played the movie producer.
Was it that was, yes, he was a fatty. That was brilliant.
Did I get the title right? Tropic Thunder?
Tropical no, Thunder? No, I think it was Tropic Heat? Tropical Heat?
Oh, grief. Which is a fantastic movie for another
exactly.
podcast.
Exactly, once we get the name right. But the point is, no, I know what you're talking about. I still know, well, as bodies go, I think Daniel Craig is fairly good. I don't think we want to go comparing.
No, no, this is interesting. I want to hear what you have to say.
Anything.
I want to see how long it takes before your eyes start glazing over.
No, I'm not going to go into... No, you know what? This is actually talking about misogyny, which is totally what we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
I think it is unfair that women aren't allowed to appreciate the sort of physical beauty of men in movies and in media, the way that men are kind of allowed to appreciate women in movies and media. When you're sitting with, you know, a girlfriend and you see a man who's easy on the eye and you sort of, and you point it out, or you kind of do the little eye gesture thing, just like, ooh, look at that. That's interesting. That's attractive. And then you get this sort of like squeezed up lemon face lip thing from them, as if, you know, you're married. You're a mother of children. You're not allowed to enjoy or look at these things anymore. And the fact is, there's...
Well, it's part of the marriage vows, isn't it? I will wear this ring. I will devote my life to you. I shall scoop out my eyes and chop off my genitals. At which point you're no use to anyone.
People don't stop being attractive when you become married. There's a difference between a personal commitment that you make to somebody and just appreciating God's beautiful creation. And I personally have no problem with appreciating God's beautiful creation.
Well, occasionally it's Dr. Mankiewicz's beautiful creation, but...
Well...
Well, I like to think I can tell the difference.
Well, that's not so prevalent with men, you know, and I don't think they're doing bumoplasties just yet, but I'm sure they're doing them in Los Angeles.
Oh, they absolutely are.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
I was reading about this in high school.
In good old downtown South Africa, most of that, and there aren't that many.
Men are getting chin implants.
Really?
They're getting calf muscle implants. Well, same muscle.
You have got to be kidding.
No, I'm serious.
You know, on a bicycle would sort that right out for them. Why would they go through the mission of surgery?
Yeah.
Anyway, I actually had a point here. And the point came down to the fact that there's obviously a kind of biological imperative to the things that make men attractive. And I think it's unfair that women can't just enjoy that. I'm not entirely sure where nice bums fit into that. It might be part of the health thing.
It is. A nice bum on a man and a woman is a muscular bum.
Yes, it's somebody who isn't overweight, isn't, and probably somebody who can run really fast.
A healthy person has a fair bit of fat in their buttocks.
Well, no, we're talking about calipigias.
Yes, but also has a fair bit of muscle underneath that. But I mean, if you look at fitness models, for example, they've got large, round buttocks.
They do.
Because they've got a healthy body weight, and they've got a lot of muscle underneath that.
You know what, maybe that's the sort of... you know how when you're looking at fruit, there are certain bits that you look at or kind of squeeze to know if it's a good fruit.
Oh,
maybe
yes.
The bum is sort of the human quick reference guide to whether or not this is a healthy individual. Possibly. I think we've veered a little off the track here.
Yes. I suppose if you want to talk about James Bond, you need to mention his bum.
Well, definitely, if we're talking about Daniel Craig, I never bothered with the
presumably
other.
He has a lovely bottom.
He absolutely
does. I have to admit, I have been remiss. I have not been looking at his bottom.
I do
am
think
badly prepared for this podcast, and I do want to apologize.
But I do think, though, that the take-home thought here is that he is easy, so easy, on the eyes. James Bond is definitely a fantasy construct.
Uh-huh.
And there is no way that he would as the character stands in the films, actually function in real life. Can you imagine this man in a supermarket queue?
You know, I'm thinking of that glorious line from Hot Fuzz, which is a police movie, not a spy movie, but still.
Yes.
Where police constable Nick, police sergeant Nick Angel, is sitting with his new friend.
Oh, and he says,
and they're watching.
I don't think I can switch off.
No, not that scene. They're sitting watching action movies. He's seeing action movies for the first time, and he's seeing how his partner sees him as this super cop. And he's sitting there very drunk, and the movie has just ended, and explosions, and there's his partner, whose name eludes me. He's all excited, and he's making, you know, shooting his finger guns into the air, going pow, pow, pow. And Constable, or Sergeant, whatever his rank was,
Nick Angel
sits there just with this look on his face, and this look of confusion, and says, "No, I'm sorry, that there's no way you could create that much property damage without incurring a significant amount of paperwork."
Exactly. Exactly that. The world of James Bond is this lovely, clean, sterile, wonderful. It's what makes it lovely and exciting. Now, and I'm looking forward to seeing Spectre. I'm looking forward to, you know, Daniel Craig, really. I enjoy Daniel Craig, but really, I love James Bond, the character. And I think it's wonderful because it's so unrealistic. Who wants to see James Bond having an argument with his asshole neighbor, or trying to explain to the primary school teacher why his daughter
hasn't done her homework?
Hasn't done her homework, or whatever, you know? Oh. We're going to get back to James Bond, and we'll be far more interested next time around.
But I think for now, let's close this off.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to work on our endings.
Yeah, I think we should cut it off and then go.